Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
I saw another Asian woman and I should go say hi to her. And I thought, well, that's silly. I can't just go up to her and say, hi, you're Asian. I am too.
It started as gatherings for food and camaraderie.
This group really brings together so many people in the Asian community.
Now they've created a multimedia exhibit on the Asian American experience in our region. Plus, his name is Laughing Fox, and he tells the stories of Ojibwe culture through spoken word and song. All that in a regional news and review after this.
Another Asian woman, and I should go say hi to her. And I thought, well, that's silly. I can't just go up to her and say, hi, you're Asian. I am too.
It started as gatherings for food and camaraderie.
This group really brings together so many people in the Asian community.
Now they've created a multimedia exhibit on the Asian American experience in our region. Plus, his name is Laughing Fox, and he tells the stories of Ojibwe culture through spoken word and song. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Almost a year ago in March, an attack in Atlanta left 8 Asian women dead. The shockwaves were felt around the nation, and within 24 hours, a group of local women of Asian descent put together a candlelight vigil at the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial in Duluth. That gathering grew into an organization, the Twin Ports APIDA Collective, APIDA being an acronym for Asian Pacific Islander Desi American. And one of the group's projects is Like Me, Like You, a multimedia exhibit now running at the Duluth Art Institute. With me are two of the collective's members, Sharon Young and Laura Judd. Welcome to Simply Superior, Sharon and Laura.
Thank you.
So I first have to make the disclosure that I am the board president of the Duluth Art Institute, and I'm married to one of the prime movers behind the Twin Ports APIDA Collective. Yes, you know who I'm talking about, Julia Cheng. And who also, again, was very responsible with you for the exhibit. That means while I probably know about the history of both the organization and the exhibit a little more than most of our listeners, we should probably clue them in. So, Sharon, do you want to tell about the group and how both the group and exhibit arose?
Absolutely. And I will just add that Julia is just a wonderful member of our group. We love her, and she is just... She's been such a wealth of knowledge. And so we're really happy to be a part of this interview. Thank you, Robin. You know, the group locally in Duluth, Minnesota, we're a group of women who started off socially, just getting together, wanting to connect over food and breaking bread. And a few of us decided to go start an offshoot group that was really centered around advocacy and really getting out in the community and helping out each other and helping out, hopefully, to the community in different ways. And so this exhibit, Like You, Like Me, really came about organically just through some discussion and asking some local artists and members of the group to contribute something that really resembled and symbolized how we are so similar to other people, regardless of race, gender, color. And so it's been a really fun project that we've been working on for many months, and we are excited for people to come view it at the Duluth Art Institute.
Mm-hmm. And I can elaborate a little bit about the social gatherings that you mentioned. You've been doing this for quite a few years. Occasionally you invite spouses and we have good food. Laura, I think your participation came a little bit later, but do you want to just both of you talk about the relationships first, which was the foundation to all this?
Sure. I have a friend who I had known for a couple of years. Her name is Jen Lien, and at one point during COVID, as we had all been in our separate spaces, she said, "Wait a minute, I think you would enjoy being a part of this group." And at the time, it was called the Asian Women Social Group. And because of COVID, we were still very separate, but people were messaging on the WhatsApp platform. And it, even though we were separate and not seeing each other, so I wasn't a part of those gatherings that you've mentioned with food and families and things like that, there was still really strong connection and feeling of togetherness, just getting to know people and being welcomed, and even just the different posts that people had of daily life or family life or food. Food is still strong in this group.
And even during COVID, we still need to eat.
Yes, we send pictures of food to each other. And so there was still that togetherness there. And that meant a lot to me. Being up here in Duluth, I'm not with my Chinese side of the family that's all down in Illinois. And I miss them. And of course, during COVID, that's, you know, exasperated. And so there was this group right here in Duluth. And I feel like even in within Duluth, this may sound a little silly, but walking around, if I saw someone Asian, for example, this happened at my son's school, I saw another Asian woman, and my immediate thought was, oh, I should go say hi to her. And I thought, well, that's silly. I can't just go up to her and say, "Hi, you're Asian. I am too." And so, but that was the thought, is that it seems like there were far and few between when I saw other Asian families or women and children, whatever it might be. And this group really brings together so many people in the Asian community. But then now with this Like Me, Like You exhibit, we're trying to say, yeah, that togetherness we feel, those connections that we feel, we all have them and we all need them. So Like Me, Like You, let's get to know each other.
Mm-hmm. And I want to delve into the exhibit in a minute. But Sharon, what sort of activities did you envision for the collective when you started and it grew beyond a social gathering? Could we call it a civil rights group or maybe social still or support or all of the above?
I mean, I think the group is still evolving. The events across the country definitely triggered some action and feeling. It started with a lot of just discussions, a safe place to talk. During COVID, it was at the height of kind of the lockdown. And so we had, a lot of Zooms. The WhatsApp was really a safe place for us to express any sort of sadness or fear or grief during those experiences. I mean, I think the country was in a time of turmoil. And I think we continually want to be evolving on what we want to do. I think right now we're just kind of getting organized, and this Duluth Art Institute project has really helped us have something tangible that many people on many levels can actually share. And I think that's what's fun. We've gone dinners together. We've gone to the film festival together, specifically to support some of our fellow artists that were involved in the Art Institute and things like that. Laura, what are your thoughts on that and what we want to do?
I remember when, because I am a newer member to the social group, when entering that, I remember you saying, "Hey, there's this advocacy group as well, if you'd like to join." And at first I didn't. I just wanted to know what the social group was about. But I want to say within a month, because of everything happening worldwide, decided, yeah, I would like to be a part of that advocacy group as well. And with that, it became the name TPAC. I think because of that broader reach. So Twin Ports, anyone here, Duluth, Iron Range, Superior, Wisconsin, just that Twin Ports. And then APIDA is the Asian Pacific Islander Desi American. And then Collective. So we're just trying to reach broader, trying to make it bigger. So yes, we are that coziness that I spoke of with the beginning connectedness and togetherness of the social aspect. But now let's also broaden that and get the expanse of really reaching out to others that need that support or maybe want to take action together.
Mm-hmm. And I would point out, by the way, that it's very diverse. The Asian community, you're talking about, half the planet. I mean, it's just a large, a very diverse group of people, and in the United States alone. So we are speaking with Laura Judd and Sharon Young, two members of the Twin Ports APIDA Collective, the creators of the exhibit Like Me, Like You, now showing at the Duluth Art Institute at the Depot in Duluth. So tell us the different components of the exhibit, which, as I said, is multimedia.
You know, the exhibit, it's been really fun to put together the exhibit. We have a few artists from the group represented. We have poetry. We have some paintings by local artists. We have some embroidery and clothing represented that people have either created or have been a part of their family. I know even Laura was a part of a project that I led, which was individual podcasts and interviews. The goal of that was really to interview local Asian folks in the community and share their experience of how their childhood was, and to allow the listener to understand how similar or how different our childhood was growing up an Asian person in the U.S. So that was really fun to interview a handful of people and really share their experience. And everyone's story is just really different, but so unique and special. And it was really an honor to interview everyone and be able to be at such a level with them where they're sharing sometimes things that are just, they're private, and to be able to share that story so others can really learn and understand where they're coming from. It was a gift.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear a little bit from the podcast. This is your interview, Sharon, with you, Laura Judd.
Both sets of my grandparents are immigrants. On my maternal side, my grandmother and grandfather are from southern China in different farming villages. They had an arranged marriage. My grandfather came to the United States when he was 12, and my grandmother came when she was 15. And I feel like they are one of those lucky stories of arranged marriages where they fell in love and they had a big family together, and they opened, I've been told it was the first Chinese restaurant outside of Chinatown in Chicago, so the first Chinese restaurant in the Chicago suburbs. And then on my dad's side, also immigrant, his parents were born in Lithuania and grew up there, and they fled Lithuania, and so my dad was born in Germany. He came to the United States when he was one, and my mom was born in the United States, and they met in college. So they met at Northern Illinois University, which is in DeKalb. So they got together and got married and started a family, and that has an interesting story to it as well. Speaking of blended families, that when they got married, my maternal grandfather did not attend the wedding because my dad was not Chinese, and my paternal grandmother did not attend because my mom was not Catholic. So as it started, there were differences that were recognized, but I guess not appreciated. And so they, two family members, did not attend, either of their own parents. Half did, half did not. And it was one from each side, so for different reasons. So very interesting. When I was in college, I had a friend that looked at my family picture and said, "Wow, you have a rainbow family," because she could see this huge Chinese family, but also, you know, the Lithuanian, the black, the white, the Filipino, the Jewish, and all of us are there together. And I feel lucky that my kids have grown up knowing this, like seeing, knowing, feeling that level of respect and openness and welcoming of all cultures, that we are all family and we all belong.
And that was an excerpt from an interview with one of our guests, Laura Judd, in a podcast produced by our other guest, Sharon Young, as part of the Like Me, Like You exhibit at the Duluth Art Institute. Laura Judd, how does it feel to be a subject of art? Maybe it's like posing for a painting. As Sharon just said, you know, this means exposing really your private life to the public, to the visitors, to the exhibit.
That's a great question, because I think I approached it in two different ways. When Sharon first presented the idea of, I would love to gather stories from a bunch of people and just to hear your story, who's willing to be interviewed? And I said, sure, a conversation with Sharon, no problem. And so we did that interview, and it felt like talking to a friend. And that was great. And then, as you mentioned, putting these private aspects of life out in the public, I thought, oh, golly, I'm very curious of how this is going to sound, or how does it come out to people, or did I get those facts right with my family? I mean, I'm telling things, very personal things about my family and upbringing and where they're from and how my grandparents' marriage was arranged, you know, so all these things are, I just wanted to make sure that my memory from childhood through adulthood matches what the reality of the adults think too. But that said, beyond wanting to be factually correct, I do think it's important. I know that for myself, in listening to the other podcasts, there's another person who says, oh, and my gunggung. And I just immediately had a physical reaction to hearing him say his gunggung.
So my grandparents, my gunggung and popo, came directly from Canton, China. My grandfather was an ally in World War II with the United States.
Which means his maternal grandfather. Because that's what I call my maternal grandfather, is gunggung. And I said, oh, you know, I think it really can reach out to people. And whether, you know, he and I are both half Chinese, but even if you're not, you would still relate, like, to the grandparent role or to the growing up somewhere else and moving. And then so there's all these pieces that really reach out, as I'm hoping that it's the like me, like you. You're just what I have experienced. Maybe it's a different culture, but we still connect. We can have that connection together.
Mm-hmm. Again, the exhibit is multimedia, as I mentioned. It includes video, photography, audio, painting. So, Sharon, what stands out to you? Something that maybe you knew was happening, but, you know, when you saw it in the end, it really struck you.
Oh, you know, I think COVID has really solidified how much I miss visiting galleries, right? I mean, so you have the perfect project. You have a project with friends, you have art, which we all love, and then when you have the final piece of something that's so personal that you want to share, it turned out better than I could have imagined. There's also origami, a collective project with origami that one of our members really put together and really brought to life. And I think just being able to walk around, and even the photography is so personal, right? And it really tells a story. It's not a very big exhibit, but I think you'll feel leaving very fulfilled and understanding where a lot of people have found joy in their life, and bringing those life experiences into their exhibit. That's what I was actually more surprised about, how it all came together. It's hard. It's hard for, I think, even one artist to be able to put an exhibit together. And then when you gather some people that are artists and some people that are traditionally not artists, but sharing their works or things that they love, it brings a different layer. I have to echo what Laura said. When I heard Eric Bojan say gong gong, I had the same emotional reaction. Switching from English to Chinese and hearing him say that, it mm-hmm. brought me home. And so I think even walking around all the different exhibits within this one exhibit, I get to come home to someone's family, their experiences. Julia, for example, you know, just the intimate photos and the feeling that she had when she took them. I feel like she's opening her eyes and her heart to the public on how she felt at that time. And I just so appreciate it. It's just beautiful, really, how everyone contributed their gifts to even just putting it together or organizing it. Laura was an integral part in much of the organization and communication of the group. And I think that's what was fun, was the start to end, and the end result was really just the bonus, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Laura, what in particular stood out to you?
Oh, sure. I feel like I approached this project, I don't know, sometimes I joke and say I paint things with rainbows and unicorns, because there are very serious issues that are underlying, but I myself kind of thought, oh, we're going to have this togetherness and this connectedness, and it does have that, but walking through it, you get that deeper inner look at someone's life story, and there's sometimes serious things. There are pieces where it brought me to tears, a couple of Julie's photographs, actually. Another member Paku Lee has an outfit, a Hmong outfit there that I thought, oh, that'll be lovely. We had talked about it. It was there. And then I read the story behind it, which I won't reveal here because it was surprising to me. And it just it made my hand go to my heart because it meant something. And so when you walk around, it really has a deeper feel to it as you read and each person's story that comes together in this. And some of it's happy, some of it's hard, some of it's sad, some of it's celebration. And I think you're going to connect to someone in that exhibit some way, somehow.
All right. We've been speaking with Laura Judd and Sharon Young, two members of the Twin Ports Apida Collective, who are the creators of the exhibit Like Me, Like You, now showing at the Duluth Art Institute at the Depot in Duluth. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Robin.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Coming up, the music and stories of Laughing Fox.
Song for the seasons. Do you remember the night? The stars, they sang to the earth. The sky turning this red haze. And the lights from the north come out to play. The world is spinning throughout infinite time. When does it slow? To show people how to see, how to breathe. Wonder, wonder, the raindrops splash against my...
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The names of the Anishinaabe are many, Ojibwe, Chippewa, Ojibwa, Chippewa, all united by a shared history of clans, language, and culture. All identify the thousands of politically autonomous bands and tribes that make the Chippewa Nation the largest tribe in North America. That's an excerpt from Miswabakan History on the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior website. One of those band members and the player of the flute you hear behind me spoke recently with my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Rick Ryer. Michael Laughing Fox Charette is a gifted musician, storyteller, and poet who enhances those stories with beautiful drum and flute performances he gives throughout the region. Here's their conversation.
Michael Laughing Fox Charette, thank you so much for being with us today.
Aho, chi mi kwich, buju, everyone. Buju in Dunaue, Magani Duk, hello to all my relatives. Papewagush, Nindajinikaj, Laughing Fox is my name. Miskwabi Kong, Nindunjaba, Red Cliff is where I'm from. Nindamikizi, Dudame, I am of the Eagle Clan. And what I have just said is a traditional Ojibwe greeting in the Anishinaabe language, in the Ojibwe language.
Thank you so much for that, Michael. The Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa are also known as Ojibwe, Anishinaabe. What are the meanings of these names, and is there a preference among your members?
Yeah, the Anishinaabe is an old name which an Algonquin people, speaking people, like to call themselves, and we associate ourselves as Anishinaabe people. And there have been other names that we have been called, and one of them is Chippewa, which we currently use, as you had stated, the Red Cliff Band, Lake Superior Chippewa. And I had heard, that Chippewa isn't really like who we are. Like Chippewa is a reference to another village, which is Bawating, which is Sault Ste. Marie. And Chippewa really means like the people of the rapids, or so I've heard. And when the government had its dealings with us, they kind of used that and categorized us all into one big group. And then another name we're known as is the Ojibwa or the Ojibwe. And some people tell us that that's actually, a style of moccasin that we wear, or the style that we do when we make our moccasins. And which is kind of funny, because if you want to talk about a tribe, and you're calling them, like the style of their moccasins, the Ojibwe tribe, that's kind of like saying, oh, there's a Nike tribe out there or a Reebok tribe out there. So I always find that kind of funny, and people will break up that word Ojibwe into a deeper meaning, which is usually the way that it goes with the Anishinaabe language and the Anishinaabe words. But our people do use, when we speak in prayer, we use Anishinaabe when we recognize our spirits and our people.
Now, Michael, you were given the name, as you mentioned, Bappe Wagouche, Laughing Fox, which is also the name you use as a musician, storyteller, when you were about 10 years old. How did you receive that name, and how do you use it now to inspire and empower others?
Yes, Bappe Wagouche is my spirit name, my spiritual name. It's a name that was given to me before I sought out a vision quest. And, you know, a long time ago, our language and culture was outlawed, so the grandmothers kept it secret. So I didn't really start learning about the culture until I was about 10 years old. And after I started to learn about it, I wanted to take part in it. And one of the things, when you come of age, one of the things that you do is you go out and seek a fast or a vision quest, you know, to commune with the spirits around you. And I wanted to do this as a way of bringing it back. And so I sought out a person who knew the naming ceremony and gave them an offering of tobacco and gifts. And they in turn talked to the spirits. And that following spring, they had dreamt a name for me, and we did ceremony. And then after I had received my Anishinaabe name, Bappe Wagouche, I was put out into the woods where I fasted for a few days without food or water.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your spiritual journey.
Well, being raised in a community where it's predominantly Roman Catholic, kind of the overall view of the Anishinaabe, the old ways, was a little bit looked down on, I think. Most people wanted to forget that. But I see a huge resurgence coming back from the culture. I gained many things from it. And from a young age, I would be immersed in these camps, these language camps and cultural camps. And the people there would bring us up every morning. We would go to the lake, and we would do a pipe ceremony for the sun to rise, you know, and we would make our offerings of tobacco. And when that sun is rising, there's a point in there that the elders teach us that all of the world is silent for a second to give praise and thanks to the sun for rising and blessing us another day. You know, and I listened to the sun, the sound of the sun rising, you know, to hear if I could hear all the animals, you know, if they really were silent. So after these camps were over, you know, at the young age, I kept going back to those spots and I kept listening. And, I've become a baker in my life. So I'm up every morning, you know, early morning all the time. And I spend a lot of time with the sun coming up. And that teaching has stuck with me the throughout my whole life, you know, being grateful every day.
Anishinaabe musician and storyteller Michael Laughing Fox Charette is our guest today. We'll hear some of Michael's poetry. This one is titled Dreams on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Rivers divide on an internal face, giant rocks moving so slow, seeping cracks roam through time underneath dreams to awaken.
Michael Laughing Fox Charette is our guest today. You just heard music from Michael's recording, Tales of Laughing Fox. That was bamboo flute. I wanted you to share the story about how the flute actually was created, how the Anishinaabe learned to make flutes.
There's a lot of different stories. You know, the flute is one of the oldest instruments out there. it's right up there with the rattle and the drum. The rattle, they believe, is like the big bang. It's the first sound in the universe, is that rattle. The second is the drum, you know, which represents the heartbeat and the heartbeat of Mother Earth, something that we're all connected to. And the third is like the flute. You know, and every culture all across the world has some sort of a flute that they play, and they all have their own creation stories with them. This is one of the stories that I had learned, because the flute is one, is like a healing tool, a healing instrument of unconditional love. And that's why it was created out of love. A long time ago in this village, there was a young man, and this young man fell in love with this young woman who was of courting age, and he couldn't talk. You know, he didn't have that gift to speak well. So he watched as other young men in the village would bring her gifts or, you know, whatever, what have you. And this kind of frustrated him because he wasn't doing that. You know, he was too shy. So he had heard that in his stories that there was a love medicine. And the spirit that carried this love medicine was the Ayabe, which is a huge albino elk that lives to the west. You know, and he thought to himself that if he could find this Ayabe, then somehow he could find this love medicine, and he could give it to this young woman, and she would know how he felt about her. So he packed up provisions and he went out into the woods, and he found the biggest set of tracks he could find out there. And he thought to himself, this is it. This has to be the Ayabe. So he started to track it, you know, and days were going by, and he would see flashes, white flashes out of the corner of his eye. And by the time he had his bow and arrow pulled back, it would be gone. And he kept following them deeper and deeper away from his village. And finally, he was exhausted from this traveling and this tracking. He made a huge fire underneath the cedar tree. And he sat there staring into the fire, listening to the crackle and the pop. And he thought about the young woman that he had all these feelings for. And as he started to drift off into sleep, the night song kind of picked up. And he went to sleep. And the next day, when he woke up to a knocking. And when he opened his eyes, he looked up into that cedar tree, and he could see a bird on the branch. And that bird was knocking on that branch, knocking holes in that branch. And after it was done, it flew away. And as it flew away, the wind picked up and it made this sound. He heard that sound and he knew instantly that that's what he was looking for. So he got up, he reached up into that tree and he grabbed a hold of that branch and he broke it off. And as he's looking at that branch, he's trying to figure out how to make it work. So he's blowing on it all different ways, but to no avail, he couldn't figure it out. So he did what was taught to him, and he took out some sacred tobacco, some esema, and he said a prayer to the spirit of that bird. And he offered that tobacco to that fire, and that fire turned that tobacco into smoke and brought his prayers up to the spirits. And as he sat there waiting for an answer, he fell back asleep. And in his dream, that bird visited him again. And he asked him, "What is it that you seek?" And the young man told him his dilemma. He told him about his heart's desire. He told him about the other young men in the village. And as the bird listened to him, you know, he felt bad for him and he took pity on him. And he started to tell the young man how to create that sound, how long to make that flute, where to put the holes. And he said, always remember when you play this to keep the image of your heart's desire in your mind, and you feel it in your heart, in your chichaguan. And when you blow it out into this flute, this bibi guan, it'll come out the end and it'll wabi guan. It'll flower. The Ojibwe word for flower is wabi guan. The Ojibwe word for flute is bibi guan. Two words connected. And as he created this first flute, he went back to his village and he stood up on a hill and he was looking down. He could see everybody working in his village. You know, some people were dancing wild rice. Some people were picking berries. Some people were drying out meat, and some people were smoking fish. And as he stood up on top of that hill, he closed his eyes and he started to play with the image of his heart's desire, where the spirits had told him to play from. Thank you. that music made its way down from that hill and into the village. And everybody that was busy doing something stopped because nobody had ever heard a sound like that before. They all stopped and they all turned to the sound. Finally, that sound made its way to the wigwam, the home of the young woman. And as soon as she heard that sound, she knew instantly that that was for her. And she came out of her wigwam and she looked up to the source of the sound and she could see the young man standing up on that hill. And she always wondered why he never came and talked to her. And she went up and she stood next to this young man and she closed her eyes. And as she listened, she was so overwhelmed and amazed that somebody could express so much love without uttering a single word. And as he played, she realized that the music was intertwining their souls together.
There seems to be, Michael, a really great healing power in these stories.
Oh, yeah. Well, when we tell these stories, they're moral stories. They're stories that have, you know, they talk about us how to live life, how to live that minobamadzi, when the good life. You know, in the beginning, there was nothing but darkness and get your money to the creator. He would send out his voice. And it would return without being heard. And in a vision, the creator saw like all these galaxies and stars and the planets and the moons and the universe, including the earth. And so he understood that this vision that he had seen had to be, you know, brought to life. So Gichi Manidu, you know, he filled the earth with oceans, lakes, rivers, all kinds of lands, mountains, plains, forests, deserts. He made four kinds of plants, you know, vegetables, trees, grasses, flowers, and he put them on the earth where they would be most beautiful and most useful. And the creator made all the animal beings. And for the first time, animals flew, walked, and swam the earth. But last, he made the Anishinaabe, and we were created in all sizes, colors, languages, ways of living. And the Anishinaabe were given several gifts that weren't given to plants or animals. And the first one was the ability to dream, to invent ways to make our dreams come true. And also a special gift. Every one of us was given some of the mystery of the creator. And, you know, that kind of begins our journey, you know, and like that kind of story connects us to, you know, not just to each other, but to a world community. Because a lot of our creation stories reflect on other people's stories. You know, there's more things connecting us than disconnecting us. You know, and after the creator makes the earth and he brings man down last, everything was going good until they start to fight over resources. You know, and soon you have neighbor against neighbor and brother against brother. And Gichi Manidu thinks that he has made a mistake, so he wants to cleanse the earth. And he does this with water. And he makes it rain, and it continues to rain and rain and rain until there's no land left, until the animals, the remaining animals, and Winnebuju are floating on a log out into this big water. And when we talk about that in our stories, you know, that goes right along with, like, the flood stories of the, you know, of everybody else's culture. Everybody has some sort of a story like that. And I like to look at these stories and tell my students, you know, this is one of those things that connects us. And yeah. When you do this, kind of get lost in my own thoughts there.
That's great. You know, you talk about connection and how these stories connect us to our earth, to each other. What is the reaction that you get when you tell these stories from non-Indigenous people?
Well, most of the times, you know, they're really respectful and they'll listen. And then afterwards, they'll come up and ask more questions. And of course, you know, I don't know, like, everything. I don't know all the stories. And I come from this village, and somebody from Madison, you know, lives down Milwaukee way, they might not have heard some of the stories that we tell up around Lake Superior, like how the Apostle Islands were created. But the stories, you know, like I said, they really teach us how to treat each other or how not to treat each other. And one of the gifts that were given to the people were the seven grandfather teachings. You know, then there's a teaching with each of them. There's love, respect, honesty, humility, courage, wisdom, and truth. And, you know, love, to know love is to know peace. Respect, to honor all creation is to have respect. Honesty in facing a situation is to be brave. Humility is to know yourself as a sacred part of creation. Courage is to face a foe with integrity. Wisdom is to knowledge. To cherish knowledge is to know wisdom. And the truth is to know that all is to know all these things. And for the wisdom teaching, I like when it says, I heard somebody say, you know, wisdom is to understand and respect the gifts in others, as well as honoring and respecting the gifts in yourself. You know, because we may not be good at everything, but there are things that we are good at. And, you know, when we recognize that, we empower people, you know, because we let them know then that they are special. They are significant to our community and to our family. And, you know, they provide as much as anybody else.
In the last few seconds we have in the program, Michael, we opened the segment with a piece of music you entitled Ndeyake, the name of your daughter. What are your hopes for her and her generation?
Ndeyake, I wanted things to be different with her, so we had a home birth. We even gave her an Indian name right away. We did ceremonies with the afterbirth, and we wanted her to go life in a good way. So when we were thinking about names, we called her Ndeyake, meaning my heart of the earth, because we wanted to show our friends and neighbors and our peers how beautiful the language is, instead of calling somebody like Michael. You know, I understand Michael sounds pretty cool to me, but there's so many Michaels out there in the world, we could wrap around the world twice. Unfortunately, 2/3 of us would perish because of the water. Ndeyake, you know, we look at ourselves. I would hope that the future generations would look to their own education and consider themselves global citizens. Look beyond your country, look beyond your own backyard, because to celebrate diversity is a really good thing. But what Mother Earth really needs now is unity.
Michael Laughing Fox Charette, thank you so much for being with us today.
That was a conversation between my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Rick Ryer, and Michael Laughing Fox Charette. I'm Robin Washington. The Regional News and Review is next. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Robin.
And our regular colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, is off today. So, Rick, we'll have to handle all the news ourselves if you think we can manage it.
Yeah.
What's been happening over the past week?
All right. Well, one of the big stories is about the Duluth City mask mandate. Duluth Mayor Emily Larson announced late last week that the city will require people to wear masks when inside public spaces. The mandate began at 5 p.m. Friday, January 14, and is going to be in place for 30 days, after which time it could lapse or be renewed as necessary. Larson pointed out to a recent surge in COVID-19 cases as the Omicron variant of the coronavirus spreads. Local healthcare providers have struggled to keep pace, especially as many of their own staff have been affected by breakthrough cases of the disease. Dr. Nick Van Dielen, who's co-president, CEO, and chief medical officer at St. Luke's, said that 162 staff members were out of work due to illness last week, and more than half of those employees tested positive for COVID.
Well, going a little bit beyond Duluth, if you're visiting a University of Minnesota campus, you'll also have to grab a mask?
Yes, you will. University of Minnesota President Joan Gable released a university-wide email late last week announcing that all of its campuses will add a temporary vaccination policy for indoor campus events. That policy will go into effect Wednesday, January 26th, and will last through at least Wednesday, February 9th at indoor events on any university campus. This policy applies to any events with an attendance of 200 or more people, including those at University of Minnesota facilities that are rented or leased by third parties. Gable said the decision follows the recent vaccination requirements made by the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul for guests of restaurants and other entertainment venues. Students, faculty, and staff will need to show their student IDs as proof of vaccination compliance to gain entry to events. All others age 5 and older must show proof of vaccination or a negative third-party COVID test taken in the previous 72 hours.
Third-party, I guess, means not your home test.
No.
All right, well, back to the local area and local schools. There's finally been some information about this serious but not widely explained Proctor football incident.
Yes, the St. Louis County Attorney's Office announced last Friday that it had filed charges against a 17-year-old boy as a result of the investigation into the Proctor High School football team. The boy, who turned 18 on Wednesday, is charged with third-degree criminal sexual conduct against a juvenile victim on September 7, 2021, following a varsity football practice at Proctor High School, according to St. Louis County Attorney Kim Mackey. A motion to try him as an adult will be filed on or before the first scheduled court hearing. The St. Louis County Attorney's Office conducted a review of the report provided by the Proctor Police Department in October and requested additional information from the police department in early November. Additional information was received from law enforcement in January. According to court documents, the boy allegedly sexually violated a 15-year-old teammate with a household object while the victim was held down by others. No additional charges are being filed at this time. The incident remains an active investigation with the Proctor Police Department.
All right. Well, speaking of police, but in a much more cheerful mode here, you generally don't call 911 to reach mom. But if you do in Duluth, you might get a mom and her daughter.
Yes, you might. In a small ceremony last week, Angela Robertson pinned her daughter, Maddie Robertson, as one of the newest additions of the Duluth Police Department. According to Duluth Police, this is the first time the department has had a mother-daughter police duo. Investigative Corps Unit Officer Angela was pinned in her swearing-in ceremony in 2009 by Maddie. 12 years later, the roles have reversed. "I don't know how to say it. I'm really proud, and she's worked really hard," Angela said. Angela also said that she brought Maddie on her first ride-along when she was 14, and Maddie decided that she wanted a career in law enforcement right then and there. "From that day on, the first ride-along, she wanted to be a cop," Angela said. "She wanted to do it, and she just kept talking about it."
That certainly is worth talking about. Are they working together in one squad car?
I don't believe they're working together, no. I don't think they're like a team or anything.
All right.
Before we go, I know you've had a busy week here with another important story nationally in one of your other roles.
Well, you're making me feel spread pretty thin. I'm also editor-at-large of the Jewish Forward, for which we had many stories this week, as did you and the rest of the world, on the hostage-taking at the synagogue in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. All four hostages held in the synagogue by a gunman escaped unharmed, three of them after Rabbi Charlie Citron Walker found a moment when the gunman was distracted and he threw a chair at him. The gunman was later killed by police. This story had reverberations around the world as one of the few where, thankfully, no innocent people were hurt. But I would point out it has several connections to our area. Several members of the local Jewish community have ties to the Texas congregation. That includes University of Wisconsin-Superior administrator and local singer-songwriter Danny Frank, who grew up with Rabbi Citron Walker in Michigan. I spoke with Danny right after the incident concluded, late on Saturday night.
He was always one of the kind of most caring and thoughtful and charitable people that I knew, even back in high school when everybody else was rebelling and, trying to sort out our authority problems. He was working on solving problems of hunger in the community. If there's somebody that is going to, you know, be in a situation like that and make it out unscathed, it's going to be him, because he is somebody who just leads with empathy and compassion.
I'd also point out that the small Texas synagogue is about the same size as Temple Israel in Duluth, and I don't know, has even the same colored bricks. And so, you know, once again, all houses of worship everywhere are reexamining and strengthening security protocols. But hats off by everyone to Rabbi Charlie for his bravery. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at DuluthNewsTribune.com and WPR.org. Next week on Simply Superior. Yep, that's a chainsaw, but it's not for taking down trees or a horror movie prop. The Lake Superior Ice Festival returns, and we'll have all the activities for fun in the frozen tundra, including those ice sculptures. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Michael Laughing Fox Charette. Stay safe, everyone.